Hey everybody, what is going on? Welcome back once again to a brand new episode of Sweeten Up Podcast, season number 2, episode number 58. I am your host, Jeff Spencer. Thank you so much for taking some time to join me today. I greatly appreciate it. Whether you have for an entire season or you are today for the first time, it doesn't matter. It means a lot to all of us here at the podcast. However, if you are just joining us for the first time, take a look back at our library of 57 episodes anytime you want, anywhere you subscribe to the show. As always, if you like what you hear on the podcast today, please be sure to subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts so that you never miss a future episode. You can also find us on Instagram and Facebook at Sweeten Up Podcast. With that being said, my guest on the podcast today is my man, Corey Paris. Corey Paris is an American politician, serving as a member of the Connecticut House of Representatives from the 145th District. Elected in an April 29th, 2021 special election, he assumed office on May 4th, 2021. Corey is an up-and-coming star in Connecticut's political scene, and being able to speak with him was such an honor. We had a great conversation covering Corey's humble beginnings growing up in Kansas, how he got into the political arena, why he decided to run for state representative, the committees he has been a part of, bills he is passionate about passing, what it's been like in his first 2 months in office, discussing Stamford, Connecticut, where he's state rep, and so much more. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, my friend and an up-and-coming star in Connecticut's political scene, State Representative Corey Paris. Joining me on the podcast today via Zoom video conferencing, I am so honored. It's such a pleasure to get to speak to this wonderful human being on the other side of my computer screen. He is a Connecticut State Representative representing the 145th District, the great and powerful Corey Paris. And State Rep Paris, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, Jeff. I appreciate you bringing me on. I don't know if the great and powerful was a reference to my time in me growing up in Kansas and calling me Oz, but I can tell you there are a lot of people who don't like me in my district that would probably hate that you just called me the great and powerful. So if I lose re-election next year, I know who to come to.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I mean, you are, and I can't wait to touch on Kansas and everything like that. And thank you so much for giving me some of your time. I really appreciate it. I know things are so hectic just coming off the last year we did, and the fact that you've only been in office a little over 2.5 months, so you're getting the swing of things and you're getting used to things. So I really, really appreciate your time. And one place I like to start with my guests, considering last year, is I like to get their perspective and their take on what went on last year. I mean, last year was crazy, COVID-19, lockdown, pandemic, that whole thing. So how did you get through it? Is everyone good? Like, how's everyone doing? And what could you tell us?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was completely in shock, as I think everyone around the world was, as COVID began to ravage our communities and our globe. And for me, I thought when people started talking about it was going to be a few weeks of nothing. I didn't expect for it to last for 15, 16, 17 months. And I didn't expect to lose or see and witness so much loss in so many people's lives that were close to me. I had COVID and I'm okay. Like, when I get sick, I usually can deal with being sick and getting over it. But this was probably one of my worst experiences ever being ill. And so it scared me. And I couldn't help but think about my grandparents who are aging and are vulnerable. And I really wanted to make it out of this to see them in person and put my arms around them one more time. So luckily, and thankfully, no one in my family passed or from COVID. I think there were only 3 people in the entirety of our family who was diagnosed with COVID and thus beat COVID. And everyone is pretty much getting vaccinated. So I feel really good about where we are in our family. I'm grateful for it. And I wish that others could have that same story. And I hope that people take it seriously and get vaccinated. And I also hope that people take their loved ones far more seriously and their time with their loved ones far more seriously than they have before.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I definitely echo that sentiment. You know, I had COVID as well, and I agree with you that it was one of the worst illnesses I've ever had, for sure. I had all the symptoms. I had a very high fever for about 4 to 5 days until it finally broke. And yeah, I remember it vividly. I'll probably never forget it. I actually got it. I was diagnosed with a positive test on New Year's Eve. So it was like so weird. It was the weirdest time.
It was before COVID was even really a thing.
Yeah. Well, no. New Year's Eve of last year.
Oh, so last year. Okay.
Coming into this year. Okay. And I just was, you know, I just couldn't believe it. But, you know, shout out to Community Health Center Danbury. I got my COVID test with them, and then I got my shot with them. So it was like a full circle moment there. So,
nice.
Yeah, I hope more people get vaccinated. I did. Everything's been good. I know a lot of people I know did, and everything's good. And it's nice to be out and not have to wear masks in certain places and all that stuff. But, you know, going way, way back, definitely take me back to your early days, your childhood, everything like that. Because, you know, I do some research on my guests, and I know that you were born in Little Rock, Arkansas, and you spent time and like we were saying before, in Kansas. So definitely bring me back and tell me sort of how your journey, so to speak, got you here to Connecticut.
Yeah, you know, I ask myself that every single day, is how the heck did I end up here? So, you know, I don't know how far we want to go back. Is it labor when you know, when I hit the table at the hospital, like umbilical cord cut? No. So born in Arkansas, and my paternal family is pretty much all still in Arkansas. Was there for the first year, 2 years of my life. And then when my folks had divorced, we had moved to Kansas and was with my maternal family. And the influences of my grandparents, of my great grandparents, my grandmother, and my aunts and uncles were really quite heavy in my life. And I grew up with a lot of cousins around. Going to church every Sunday, going to school with my cousins every day. We all went to the same school and sometimes carpooled together. It was as normal in that space, you know, in those early years. It was as normal as a childhood as one could get. A lot of people don't realize is that. My middle school and high school years, I spent in Las Vegas. There was a family relocation there. And so was there for middle school and high school, graduated from high school there, and then came back to Kansas right after my graduation. And I think of all the places, and people often ask me, like, could you ever go back to live in Arkansas or in Kansas? And I said, absolutely not. I love both places. You know, I love the fishing and the hiking and the scenery, being, you know, with family in Arkansas. And in Kansas, I love the sunsets and, you know, the horseback riding and restaurants and the friends and my family and all those great memories and my, you know, the lake, all those things I really do love, but I do not think I could ever go back. I think I have been Yankee-fied to no end. I'm a New Englander, and I don't think that it can get out of my system.
Gotcha.
So
you love the
road. You know, it's a great place. I am yes. So I am, and so for all of your listeners out there, Jeff is throwing some shade because I ended up canceling a few weeks ago for me to appear on the podcast a few weeks ago because the Royals were playing the Yankees. And I could not miss the Royals playing the Yankees. I'm a huge Royals fan. I'm a huge Chiefs fan. Always have been and probably always will be. And it's a popular time to be fans for both sports teams. So that's one thing that will never change here. That and my love for barbecue will never, never change for Connecticut.
You know, I was, you know, when I heard you were a Royals fan, I was like, man, I'm going to have to talk to you. You know, I'm a Mets fan. So the 2000. Was a brutal time for me, and I'm sure a great time for you. But you're right; it is a great time to be a Kansas sport fan. I cannot argue with that one bit.
It's only taken us 60 and, you know, 50 plus years to get here, so we'll accept it and go with it as we can. It's not going to be here forever, I'll tell you that.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for sharing that, and you know, we're definitely glad you're here in Connecticut and everything. And you know, I know you graduated with a Bachelor of Science degree at Western Connecticut State University. I live in Danbury right now. I just moved here recently. I dig it over here. And, you know, what could you tell us about your time over there and everything you learned at Westcom?
And it's interesting because I think it says a lot about how I got to Connecticut. I had a really good friend. I was doing a 9-month program in DC with Center for Progressive Leadership and People for the American Way. And I had a really good friend at the time who was from Stanford and said, you should come to Connecticut to visit. And I refused. I said, absolutely not. You all don't cook. You all eat out at restaurants all the time. You don't speak to people in grocery stores. I'm not coming up there. And somehow, by an act of God, he got me to come out. And I fell in love with Connecticut. I thought it was just beautiful. And I really loved Stanford. Stanford was the first place I've ever visited in Connecticut. And so I would visit often over the course of the next year. And I was deciding where I was going to transfer out from Kansas, where I was going to school. I was trying to decide where I was going to transfer to. Someone had mentioned UConn. Didn't think I would do UConn. Didn't want to go to school in New York. I wanted to be in Kansas. I wanted to be in Connecticut, excuse me. Freudian slip. And so someone said, well, UConn's too far up and it's, you know, it's too much like Kansas. Why don't you get down to Danbury on your way back to New York? Cause that's where I was visiting at the time, and check out Western. So I did. I walked around campus. People were really nice. Their programs were amazing. The cost for out-of-state students was not as bad as it would have been going to UConn. And I felt like I would have been an actual person instead of another number at Western. And so I went back, I applied, I got in, I moved that summer, and immediately found myself getting involved in on campus in student government, where I've met some of my best friends that I can't seem to get rid of to this day. And that includes my good friend, Mike, who we have as a mutual friend, and became student body president there and really wanted to bring about transformative change on campus, which I think we were really successful with. We brought back, you know, age old traditions with the bonfire, and we incorporated, you know, new traditions with holiday trees, and had more opportunities for students to have their voices heard to increase diversity. So for me, that college experience was really fun. And I got a chance to work at the Clinton Foundation during that time. So I do not regret going to school at Western. I think it was the best decision I've ever made. And I only hope to continue to encourage other young people to go to school at our state institutions too.
Nice. That's awesome. So you've always had this sort of passion and love for advocacy and you know, having that voice and being able to use it for good and for good
purpose. Always.
That's awesome. That's really cool. You know, before you were talking about People for the American Way, just for those who don't know what is that? And what was your role with them?
So there was this great program that would take hundreds of young, progressive minded people from all over the country and put them in this program to learn about progressive issues, of how to advocate for progressive issues and work for progressive organizations with other like-minded people that they would have never have crossed paths with. And so my placement was with People for the American Way, and it was actually founded by Norman Lear, who wrote All in the Family and The Jeffersons and Three's Company. And so Norman found People for the American Way many years ago. And the organization focuses on civil liberties, voting rights, individual liberties and freedoms. And they do some phenomenal work. It's being headed up by right now by Benjamin Jealous, who is former head of the National NAACP. They are really focused on making sure that Americans' freedoms are protected. And then they had a component of that work, which was focused on youth engagement. And so it was called Young People For. And Young People For would bring people from all over the country to the area, to DC, to be in this program. They would meet in different parts of the country, but they would put together blueprints for social justice of big projects and commitments that they wanted to build out in their communities over a period of time. And they would get funding for this and guidance and mentorship for this. And so I was always so impressed, and I became a trainer and I trained them on how to raise money for their causes. And I think that the work has really formed my mind on a ton of things that I now advocate for today. And what's interesting is that they have another component called Young Elected Officials Network, YEO Network, which a ton of young electeds here in Connecticut are a part of. So Brandon McGee, Quentin Phipps. I know I'm missing people, but you know, it's a great network for people to check out and to support.
Cool. Very cool. Thank you for explaining that. That's awesome. Yeah, no, it's a, what they do is great. And I hope they continue to do, the good stuff that they keep doing for sure. And, you know, on another note, I know you were the president of the Connecticut Young Democrats. How did that come to be? What did you do with them? How much did you enjoy that? And what was that like?
Do you want the real story on that? Or do should I sugarcoat it and give you the political answer? We can go both ways on this.
Let's do it.
So I was actually involved. I was actually vice president of the Kansas Young Democrats when I lived in Kansas. And when I left there and got involved here, I didn't think that I was going to get involved with Young Dems here. But one of my best friends, Constance Vickers, was the president at the time. And she coerced me to joining her to doing some good work with Young Dems. And so I said I would do it. I became their executive VP, so second in command to her. And I think as COVID started going on, my plan before COVID, which a lot of people don't realize this, my plan before COVID hit in 2020 was to travel, play a lot of golf, travel, go all the places I wanted to go to, because I knew I was going to run for office again one day, didn't know when it was going to happen, but I wanted to, you know, really see the world before I had no life anymore. And I had no time left because it was dedicated to public service. So I called Constance right one night, and I've been vice president for almost 2 years now. And I said to her, I said, "Hey, I'm thinking about resigning, and I just want to give you a heads up that we can announce at the next meeting." And she said, "Okay, not a problem." She said, "Just stay in for two more meetings." And I said, "Not a problem." Next meeting, she says to everyone, "I'm resigning, folks. I'm no longer going to be president. I have too much going on at work, and Corey's going to be the new president." And I literally wanted to murder her that night. So that is me and how I got involved with Young Dems. And that's the honest to God truth, how I became president. But I say this in a serious tone right now. Everything happens for a reason. I became president in a time where our country was dealing with the murder of George Floyd. We were under what I believe under immense siege within our own government, certainly by the office of the presidency. And I'm a huge institutionalist. I believe that the presidency and Congress and our institutions are bigger than any one person. So for me, I wanted to devote every waking moment to and resource to unseating Donald Trump as president and electing Joe Biden. And I think also electing a ton of like-minded Democrats in our state. So all throughout COVID, with the mask on, a lot of us Young Dems were traveling across the state campaigning for a ton of phenomenal candidates. And it was really tough because there was a lot of racism that was, experienced, that had been experienced in some of these canvassing visits. We had to raise money to help support some of these candidates and endorse them. And so for me, it was important to do this work. I could not be president that year. And so I'm really glad that we did it, because obviously we gained more seats in the House than we had in the prior biennium. We had elected Joe Biden president. We had raised money to support Young Dems. We were putting together a campaign school I hope will be continued to help young people run for office and learn how to advocate and protest at whole nine yards. So for me, the work that was done there was critical. And I think that more young people need to get involved in that.
Well, that's a great and funny story for sure. But you're right. On a serious note, you did come in at a great time, a time when someone like yourself with a young voice and just talent and knack for what you do was needed. And, I think it's great. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on, because, you're just a really mindful young voice that I think is really going to help our state. And, kind of going back to George Floyd, what was your first thoughts when it happened? And what would you like to see happen further? I mean, really nothing's quite been done. I mean, we've seen the trial take place and he got his jail sentence and everything like that. And, But yeah, on your perspective, what would you like to see more of and what were your thoughts?
You know, I felt like I was hiding my blackness for the last 20 plus years. I felt like this George's death was another example when it initially happened. I felt like it was going to be another example where I was going to have to downplay the atrocities that African Americans face in this country every day. And I have to code switch the moment I walk out of my house and I get in my car about how I sound and speak and the words that I use and how my tone is. Certainly being in senior management for a major nonprofit and also being political. And I feel like George Floyd's murder allowed for the gloves to come off and for me to really be who I am and not have to always second guess and think about what I was doing. If I was acceptable to white space, to white people in their spaces. That was really, so it was I won't say that it was a necessary means to this end, but I think that it was certainly helpful for a lot of people to finally say, you know what, I am black. I'm owning that I'm black. I'm going to be black all day, all night, at work, outside of work, in political spaces, in social spaces. That is who I am. And I think that's been really helpful for people. And I hope to see that we listen more. As we go along, I think if George Floyd, I think two things helped. If we had not been in COVID and everyone had not been at home, and if it had not been recorded, I don't think we would have had as much awareness around these atrocities and action, some of the actions that are being taken. I don't think any of that would have happened. And I honestly believe that Donald Trump would have probably been reelected president.
Gotcha. Well, I appreciate your thoughts on that and, for sharing your thoughts and everything like that very much. You know, I definitely want to move on to the whole state representative gig you got going on now and just started recently.
Yeah.
Were elected April 29th and you assumed office May 4th. So like, you know, like 2.5, we're getting almost to the 3-month mark here. And definitely tell me why you decided to run. And what it was like winning the election and everything that transpired afterwards?
You know, so a few things. I think people have to understand what my family life was growing up in terms of extended family with my great-grandparents. My great-grandpa was probably the person who taught me more about politics than anyone else in my life. He was a staunch Republican. He loved George Bush. He loved Ronald Reagan. He loved Bob Dole. And so I actually remember being 5 years old, watching the Republican National Convention in San Diego, California. Bob Dole was accepting the nomination to be the nominee for president for the Republicans. And I remember telling my grandpa that he was going to lose because Bill Clinton had done a good job with the economics is what I said at the time, not the economy, the economics. And my grandpa looked at me, he was like, who, what? Like, get this kid out of here. What the heck, what does he know? But, and to this day, you know, he would always test me on history. We would sit down on Sundays after church and I climb up on him, on his lap, and he would test me on all of the presidents at 5 and 6 and make me memorize them in order. And then he'd do the first ladies and he'd do like little history things here and there, events. So I think the mindset has always been that we were supposed to give back in some way to others because we felt, you know, extremely fortunate and blessed to have the opportunities in life that were afforded to us. And I often tell people that I am the black sheep of my family. And they look at me and they're like, but you're a state rep. At 29, how are you the black sheep? I'm thinking, you know, and perfect example, one of my cousins was just named vice president of A&R for Warner Records 2 weeks ago.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and see, black sheep, right? Another cousin runs one of the largest and most successful real estate firms in Virginia. They're athletes, they're lawyers, they're doctors, they're entertainers, they're authors. There are nonprofit founders and directors and 3 and 4 degrees for one of, you know, between some of these folks. And here I am, just a state rep. And I barely, you know, I think I'm, you know, excuse my language. I feel like I'm hot shit now, right? Because I get to be called the honorable. And so I don't care about it publicly being called the honorable, but it's with my cousins. You know, I finally, the little runt of the group can finally be called the honorable. And one of my cousins remarked recently, are they nuts? They're calling you the honorable. Obviously, they've never played Scrabble with you because you're the least honorable person in the world whenever we play a board game. So, you know, I still can't shake being the runt of the group or the black sheep of the group. But I say that, you know, in jest and jokingly, but it's just expected of us to do well for others. And so for me, I knew my niche was always in politics, around policy, around really being able to listen to people and try to be their voice in different spaces that I could navigate better than they could and more effectively than they could, and to help them find solutions that they may not have thought of. And so that has, you know, politics was always going to be the thing. And when the opportunity came, I was not expecting to run for office. I was asked by a ton of legislators across the state to run for state representative. And some of my mentors had encouraged me to do it. And there were a lot of issues that I cared so deeply for that it made perfect sense for this to be the time to get involved and to run now. So here we are, you know, 4 months later. It's been the craziest 15 and a half weeks of my life, but I wouldn't change it for the world.
That's awesome. And I know the 145th district is over there in Stamford, and we were talking about how, you know, how much you love Stamford earlier. And, you know, what could you say about Stamford? You know, what are some issues going on there that you would like to tackle? And, you know, what are your thoughts?
You know, Stamford is, and this is easy for me to brag about Stamford because I do this all the time with my colleagues in the House and they roll their eyes. But Stamford really is the economic engine of our state. All big things that happen as far as innovation and business enterprise and business, it all comes from Stamford. I also believe that we, you know, can show the state how to grow diverse communities and populations as more people are moving into Connecticut, because we are one of the most diverse cities in our state. And arguably, we've done much better with COVID and getting people, keeping the rates of positivity down, and also making sure that the rates of vaccinations are high. Like, I'm going out on doors, knocking on doors, getting people out in my district to go get vaccinated. So I think Stamford is a great place to raise a family. I think it's a great place for a young person, for aging citizens and constituents to live. I just think that there's no better place to live in Connecticut aside from Stamford. And I'm not saying that because I'm up for re-election next year. I say that because I truly mean that. And anyone who knows me knows that I go on and on and on about Stamford, because it's a great example for the future, for what our state could be. And I think when we talk about issues here in Stamford, I talked to the Lieutenant Governor about this yesterday, the two issues that I feel like we need to focus on in the legislature, that would not only help retain young people and keep them living here in Connecticut, but attract other families to come here, to Connecticut, and also further increase our quality of life and remain an economic engine across the Northeast, are two key issues and investments that we need to make in education. The first being making our state universal pre-K, a universal pre-K state, which if we were able to do that, one, people need to realize that kids between the ages of 0 to 5, 90% of their brain is developed in that age group. Now, we are so thoughtful and used to spending money and investing money in education in terms of middle schools and high school age children, but we're missing the mark when it comes to young kids who are pre-K students. And if we had more, if we had universal pre-K across our state, it would enable more women to go back to work. On average, women throughout the pandemic have lost nearly $750 a paycheck on average across the country because they don't have access to affordable and quality childcare services. It would enable young families to go back to work. And think about this, right? We have the Children's Learning Centers right in my district. It's the second largest early childhood education center in the state, where 50% of, I would say probably 53% of childcare facilities closed across the state. CLC was remaining open. And because we remained open and we kept our numbers low with rate of infection, more people in Stanford and in surrounding towns and cities were able to stay at work during the pandemic, which kept food on their table, money in their pocket, and their children learning and developing at a rate that they needed to learn and develop. So if we get this right, it keeps kids out of jail in the future. It keeps parents working. It levels the playing field and better prepares our students for when they go to kindergarten and beyond. And not only that, but it allows for us to have a more substantive and equal society in Connecticut. Now, that's the first issue and the first investment that we would have to make. The second is for those who are in college. And I truly believe, now I know a lot of people love UConn, and I think that UConn, now I'm also a Jayhawks fan, so I could get in a lot of trouble here. And UConn is a wonderful institution, and they do a phenomenal job in educating many of the leaders throughout our state and throughout the world. However, UConn gets a lot of love, and Southern and Central and Eastern and Western don't get nearly as much in resources and support from our state as UConn would. And UConn has a huge endowment with a ton of private donors that can support them, whereas these state schools don't necessarily have that. And I know that for a fact. So you have a lot of these students racking up student loan debt in the state institutions. It's very hard to keep a lot of these students in school in the state institutions. The retention rate is very low their sophomore year, and it's higher, the retention rate is lower amongst students of color, and primarily Black men, because they can't afford to go to school after a while. Their aid doesn't cover everything. So then they're still leaving, you know, with all of these student loans and with debt. And so you walk across that stage and you want to leave Connecticut immediately because you can't afford to live here and you can't find a job here and you're already saddled down in debt. So you want to go to Florida or you want to go to North Carolina. Well, you know what? I believe that if when those kids walked across the stage and if my state, if the state of Connecticut said to me, we'll pay off 1 year of your loan every year that you stay, work, and live in Connecticut, if you went to a state institution. And if you did that, you're not only going to stay here because you're going to find a good job, but we're educating our own workforce that understands Connecticut right here in Connecticut. You all are buying homes fair and free in some of our greatest towns and cities. And now you're raising families and your kids are going to have the same opportunities that you're having. That's another way to ensuring that our state remains solvent and stronger and resilient in the future. And I think if we make those two investments in education, the right investments, because that seems to be what's plaguing families right now, everything else in the middle with kindergartners to middle schoolers to high schoolers to even college students, everything else will be taken care of because we made that investment in the beginning. And we're also making that investment as they're walking into adulthood. And then your kids won't be in the house with you until you're 40 years old, which nearly 40% of young people between the ages of 24 to 33 are living at home with parents right now.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I love it. And I think it's, you know, I think it's a great idea and incentive. And I hope movement can take place on that for sure. And, you know, speaking of that and other things, you know, what are some other things you're very passionate about that you would like to see the state do? And how was the most recent legislative session? Because I know when I first reached out to you, you were in the throes of the legislative sessions, working late nights. I can't even imagine. And so what was that like? And what are some other things you would like to see get accomplished?
You know, I have realized that the legislature is not good for my diet because I snack all night while I'm at the Capitol. Like I'm sitting, I'll be in the chamber for a long period of time. I'll leave the chamber. I'll go up and, you know, grab a snack or grab candy and just sit in there and listen to debates, work on some constituent emails, work on some work stuff, and then also connect with some of my colleagues and some of the caucuses that we're in. But I just eat all the time because you have to stay up. So, and then by the time it's 1 or 2, 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm driving an hour and a half from Hartford to get back home to Stanford. And I'm up. I'm falling asleep on the road, but I'm up when I'm hitting the door and I'm walking into the house, and I'm up for like another 3 or 4 hours. And then I watch really stupid TV, and then I fall asleep for 5 hours and get up and do it all over again. So it is a lot of fun. I will tell you that. I cannot see myself doing this into my 60s or 50s. It's not going to happen, but I will tell you that it was a lot of fun. It was trial by fire. I jokingly tell people, although I'm really serious, it took me 3 hours to find the bathroom on my first day at the Capitol because it was just so much going on. But I believe that this is probably the greatest honor of my life, is serving in the legislature. And I think, you know, as we talked about early childhood education and we talked about higher ed, you know, something else that I really feel like we should look into as we move forward is finding a way to curb housing affordability in our state. And a new study just came out that showed across the country, but certainly in the Northeast, that you could work full time, 40 hours a week, plus some overtime, living on minimum wage, and still not be able to afford living in any of these cities and suburbs that a lot of us live in. And certainly I understand that from the standpoint, because Stanford's a very expensive place to live. Most of Fairfield County is. So I think if we can find a way to one, keep taxes where they are and not raise taxes unless we absolutely have to. And if the taxes are being raised, I would hope that they be raised on high income earners, as opposed to the middle class. And then the other thing is making sure that we're attracting more businesses that can create more jobs for people here. And I think that recently, it just came out yesterday, as a matter of fact, that Connecticut's the 24th best state in the country for businesses. And so I think that's another big focus of mine. And I think if we continue to chart how we get there, we'll be in much better shape as we move forward.
Well, that's awesome. You know, thank you so much for sharing that. I was very curious to hear what you're very passionate about and everything like that. I know recently, as of, I don't know, what, a couple days or something, there was a big vote on legislative powers for the governor here to continue his having legislative powers. So, you know, for those who maybe don't understand what that means, what does that mean? How did you vote? And what's been transpiring now afterwards?
Right. That's a great question. So we did go back into special session to focus on whether or not we were going to give the government, extend the governor's powers, executive powers. And essentially what that means is that he could legislate by executive order without having to get a vote from either the Senate or the House on using emergency powers, especially geared towards the pandemic. The governor has had his powers extended multiple times since the start of this pandemic. And really a lot of people were dead set against the governor getting his powers extended. I was skeptical at first, I must admit. It took me a little bit to become a yes on it, simply because I think that a lot of other states of our size and who have combated COVID as successfully as we have, their governors no longer have executive power from their legislatures. Well, the other big thing that people, I think, obviously miss out on is that there are a lot of federal dollars and support that's coming from Washington to support our state that we can only get if our governor does have his executive powers extended to him. So, you know, more money to focus on COVID relief, vaccination sites, making sure that we have more vaccinations available for communities, ensuring that there is relief for housing, and rent control for folks who may be facing evictions once the moratorium is lifted. Also, I think the other thing is that there are a lot of communities that have been hurting, the towns and cities that were going to be in the red this year that are now going to be in the black because of some of the support. So if we can get more dollars in to support our constituents and support our communities, I'm for that, especially when the governor has made it clear that he does not intend to do anything, you know, ostentatious in the sense of how he will use the stroke of that pen with an executive order. And I think that he's proven that, you know, he's had a steady head when it comes to these things. The other thing is that, and we have to be very real about this, right now in Mississippi, there are 10 children in an ICU under the age of 12 who are diagnosed, who have been diagnosed with COVID, and they all have the Delta variant. And while we're all out right now not wearing masks and we're feeling good and we're, you know, enjoying some sense of normalcy throughout the world, you know, the falls are always brutal on us, and we can't take our eye off the ball. We don't know if our kids are going to have to be mandated to wear masks when they go back to school. We don't know how Delta is going to show up in Connecticut. And so for the governor to have the opportunity to say, you know, on August 31st, if Danbury has, you know, very high cases of the Delta variant and people testing positive for COVID, the governor can say, we're shutting down all the restaurants and all of the, you know, open public facilities in Danbury and try to get the numbers under control. And he may have to do that to surrounding towns and the surrounding areas. I want my governor to be able to make that decision. And I think, honest to God, and I'm sure that people will disagree with me on this, and that's fine. I think that there are boards of education across our state in towns and cities. And I think that there are municipalities across our state in towns and cities that don't want to have to make that decision. I think they rather punt it off to the legislature and punt it off to the governor to make that decision because they don't want the blowback that they would get from their communities. And I think because the position that we are in, we're happy to make that decision for people. I'd rather be safe than sorry. And I think that this is part of the reason why we extended his powers moving forward.
Got it. I appreciate your explanation on that. I also saw that our other friend of the pod, Gary Winfield, voted yes on it after debating and thinking about it. And he had a really cool, you know, talking about his mom on the floor and stuff, because I know how much his mom means to him. So that was all, you know, I love Gary Winfield whenever he gets personal like that. He's such a real, real dude. Like, I really respect that guy. He's awesome.
He is. And you know, I tell people all the time, if when they said, how did you run for office? You can blame Gary Winfield. Okay. Gary called me multiple times saying, you're going to do this. And I'm like, no, I'm not. And he's like, yeah, you are. You don't have a choice. So he's one of my mentors. He's been a mentor for a very long time. And I really admire him. And I think that he has really modeled what it means to be a genuine and authentic public servant, and modeled how powerful your own personal story can be in legislating. So I love Gary.
Yeah, me too. And, you know, I can see the influence, man. He's awesome. And, you know, I met him in 2016 at the Bernie Sanders rally. That was the first time I met him. And when he introduced Bernie, I'm like, yo, this dude's awesome. Like, I'm a big Bernie guy. I've been a big Bernie supporter for many, many years. And so when I saw that, I was like, oh, he's down with Bernie. That's cool. Like, you know, that's nice. And then I remember talking to him, and then he came on the podcast. Great guy. Really awesome guy. You know, I understand that recently there was pretty historic event that took place in Connecticut in regards to the legislative session with the legalization of marijuana. And when that happened, you know, what was your thoughts on that? And obviously it's a good thing on many different fronts. So what could you tell us?
You know, that's a good question. I think it's about time for us to decriminalize marijuana in the United States, period. And certainly I'm glad that Connecticut is taking the right step legalizing it in our state. I want to make sure that we also expunge the records of so many people of color whose lives have been altered by this in such a negative way. especially when there are a ton of white folks who are now partaking in it and want to sell it and monetize it. And I think that's fine. However, we need to make sure that there's justice done all around. You know, Jeff, and we talked about this actually when we were in deliberations over the bill before we went out to vote as House Democrats. We talked about the fact that Jeff, you from Greenwich, could have gone out and bought some pot and had some pot on you and got pulled over, and me from, let's say at the time, you know, Waterbury or Bridgeport or New Haven would have gotten pulled over, and I would have gone to jail and you would have gotten a slap on the back. And so for us, you know, for me, I want everything to be equal and I want everything to be fair for those in our state. And I think that if we can find a way to make good revenue from this and cut into what's being spent from Connecticut in Massachusetts, I think that's another really progressive and pragmatic way to look at this. So I feel really good about where we're going. I think there are going to have to be things in the future that are worked out with this bill in particular. But I think that we are legislating in the right way, in a really pragmatic way. And look, I told people, Montana, as conservative and ruby red as Montana is, had enacted marijuana legislation 3 or 4 weeks before we had. And if Montana can do it, then I don't know why Connecticut wouldn't be able to do the same as well.
Awesome. Very cool. Love your take on it. And I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with everything you said. And, you know, when you get some free time, what are some things you like to do? I mean, I know I was talking to Mike and he told me, he goes, you got to mention, you know, hobbies, baseball, soul music and barbecue. So definitely give me the lowdown.
So I love barbecue. I love barbecue. And people don't realize this in Kansas City. We're the barbecue capital of the world. You could be in Kansas City and eat barbecue every day for 30 days for a month straight. 3 meals a day in Kansas City and still not eat at every barbecue restaurant in Kansas City. So as soon as I go to Kansas City, I get off the plane, I go eat barbecue. There, I have some favorite barbecue spots here in Connecticut. Hoodoo Brown's one of them in Ridgefield. Bear Smokehouse, which is Kansas City-based barbecue. The closest one is in New Haven. I love them. So barbecue's big. I do love baseball. I love to play tennis and golf now. That's another big thing. And Mike, when he talks about soul music, which, you know, he really gets on my nerves because he doesn't admit that I've put him onto some pretty good music. Mike Frazier never puts me onto good music. He puts me onto, he does. He puts me onto good music. Paul Simon's Graceland album is probably one of my favorite albums, and Mike did put me onto that. But I'm a huge vinyl collector. So I love collecting vinyls. I love listening to music. I love reading. If you ever come to my house, like, it's filled with books all on the floor on bookshelves, vinyls all over the place. Like, it's crazy. So I love to read. Now I like to spend more time with my friends because I don't get to do that as often. So that's another big thing. I'm a pretty simple person. I love to travel, and I haven't been able to travel as much as I would like. But I think after next year, I'll get back into the swing of things.
That's awesome. I mean, you would have loved, you know, speaking of your vinyl obsession, my first podcast studio I had when I was still living in Newtown, my dad had thousands, maybe like 5 to 6,000 records that were down in the podcast studio on a shelf. My guests used to turn around before they'd sit down and be like, oh my God, like that's a lot. my dad had a lot of records, and you know, I wished him the best of luck when he had to move them to his new place. but yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that. And you know, I love soul music. I know these are pretty much, you know, the regular guys, but Al Green is a major favorite of mine, as are the OJs. And in fact, one of my friends, Sam Hollander, he's a big time producer in Hollywood, and he does some work with the OJs still to this day. And he tells me about it, and I'm like, I'm so jealous, man. I wish I could stand in your shoes. But
I love the OJs, and Al Green, of course, is a favorite of mine. I will tell you, I've been into Simply Red a lot more lately than I've ever been before. And if you don't know Simply Red's music.
Oh, yeah.
So Mick, so I love Mick because I love the red hair and the ponytail, and his voice is so haunted. And I found one of my favorite songs from Simply Red is Stars. And so I found the Stars album on vinyl, and I was so glad to get that. And the most recent that I actually purchased was TLC's album with the Red Light Special and is on there, and Waterfalls. I just got that.
Oh, wow.
And Miles Davis. And so I have really great jazz. I've got really great pop, and I've got really great, soul on vinyl. And the other one that the last person I tell everybody about, which no one ever thinks of, she is probably one of my favorite jazz artists that I discovered her during COVID, and her name is Blossom Dearie. And she used to play the New York circuit a lot in supper clubs in New York in the 50s and 60s, but has an amazing, amazing voice. And I found her on YouTube, but I found one of her vinyls on Vinyl Me Please. It's a website where I buy a lot of stuff that I just can't find anywhere else. So I always go to Vinyl Street Cafe to buy vinyls, or I'll buy them on Vinyl Me Please. But if you have a chance, listen to Blossom Dearie. I just love music. I love it. And now everyone else is now trying to start getting into the collecting of vinyls, and I'm trying to tell them to back off. You know, we were all here first. You all are just trying to get new because it's the hipster thing to do. But definitely love music. Definitely love music. So Mike Frazier's right with that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm huge into music. My family's very musical. I've played the drums and the saxophone for years.
Wow.
Love it. So right there with you on that. And you know, do you have any role models or idols or anyone that, you know, when you're doing anything that you do, they come to mind and they kind of, you know, keep you grounded and keep you focused on what you're doing?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I have politically, I think I have like a handful of people that I try to channel in terms of being a legislator, being a public servant, speaking, and just how I go about being intentional. So Sergeant Shriver is one of my favorite political leaders in history, probably one of the smartest men involved in politics. I mean, he helped his wife, Eunice Kennedy Shriver, found the Special Olympics. And then he was also the founder of the Peace Corps. He ran for vice president of the United States in 1972, but he was just such an honest and ethical man, which was really hard to find during that time period. And the other person, of course, JFK is one of my favorite presidents. Jimmy Carter is one of my favorite presidents. And I really love, well, I have to love Bill Clinton because he was my governor when I was born. And there are a lot of Arkansas Clinton stories that I can go on about. And of course, Barack Obama, I think, is an inspiration for any young person, certainly a young person of color running for office. So those men, and I think there are a ton of women who, and I'm, you know, because we're short on time, a ton of women who I find to be role models for me. But I think the ones that I can really point to that really keep me grounded are my grandmothers. They are literally the strongest women I've ever known. They're brilliant. They're smart. They're charming. But they're so genuine, and they're tested and resilient. And so, I think that to be the case of most of women in general. And so for them, I always have their voices in my head, and really grateful that I still have them around.
That's very cool. I love that. I love that. You know, I'm with you, man. Women are, you know, women are special. They're powerful. I mean, they go through a lot more than we do. And, you know, a lot of insight. You know, I always used to say, like, my mom passed in 2019, and I always used to like to say, you know, I've noticed that sort of like presence is sort of like missing, so to speak. And so you're so right. Like, it's so nice to have that perspective and that insight. I mean, women are so strong. It's so cool and awesome and historic to see Kamala Harris and what she's doing now as vice president. I think it's so cool that we have a woman vice president. And And the first time that I was able to vote in an election, I voted for Barack Obama. I love that guy. I think he's awesome. I've read all his books, and very insightful and impactful and everything like that. And, you know, speaking of barbecue before, you should definitely come to Danbury sometime and join me at the Q. I've actually never been, but people keep telling me the Q in Danbury is legit. So
I've heard of it. I don't know. Do they? I feel like they're the same ones. They have another one in New Milford.
Maybe. Yeah. Sure. Okay.
So, but I'll come out. Look, you say barbecue, I'm going to be there. I'd be there in an hour if I could. But I will hold you to that, and we'll get Frazier to pick up the bill for the barbecue.
Yes.
So you can, I'll call him afterwards and tell him that that's going to be the plan.
I love it. That's a great plan. That's a great plan. You know, a few more things before we wrap up, and thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. And one of those is, speaking of Stanford, what's your thoughts on the mayoral race? Bobby V, who I met when I was 9 years old at his restaurant, running for mayor. I actually reached out to him to see if he'd want to come on the podcast. And he did get back to me, so I'm trying to see if maybe he'll join me. But, you know, what's your thoughts on the mayoral race and everything like that?
I'm staying out of the mayoral race until the Democrats have an endorsed candidate. I'm in a weird space, right? One of my really good friends and colleagues who is a rising star in our party and in our state, Caroline Simmons, we've been friends for a very long time, is running. And again, another person who has taken me under their wing and who's a really thoughtful and impactful leader, and that's Mayor David Martin. You know, it's also running for the endorsement. So I'm in a tough spot because I love and adore them both. And I think that they would both be phenomenal mayors. And I can tell you that I'm not voting for Bobby Valentine, but I think that it's great that he's running. You know, we need more voices in these races, and that's all I can say.
it's definitely funny. I mean, when you think about it, like the ex-manager of the New York Mets and the Red Sox, and he managed in Japan, and he's considered like a god over there. They have a statue of him. So yeah, it's a little overboard. It seems a little gimmicky. But I would love to have your friend on. If she'd be willing to come on, I'd love to have her on, because I think the race is super cool, and I think Stanford's a great place, as you know, we've obviously talked about. But, you know, one other thing that I definitely want to talk to you about is, you know, just sort of how you've been managing, how you manage being a state rep with your, you know, with your life, with, you know, with what you do on a day-to-day basis that doesn't have to do with that. And just how you juggle everything so far in the last, you know, almost 3 months.
You know, I don't think I do. I don't think I do manage it. And I think I have to be okay with there being parts and areas of my life that are facing serious neglect. And, you know, people think that we are just legislating 24/7 and going to events 24/7. No, you know, I still have a full-time job on top of being in the legislature. So I'm still working as a nonprofit director, five days a week, being a legislator 7 days a week. And there are times where I have to go leave my job to go do things for being a legislator. And then even when I'm a legislator, do things for my job. So I'm trying to give myself a lot of space. And I think that the challenge that I am facing this week is that there are a ton of, we're in mid-July now, just about, and there are a ton of events happening and a ton of requests for me to be at places. And I'm starting to say no, because I need time for myself too. You know, and that's the biggest piece of advice a lot of other legislators have given me, is that you have to turn off your phone. You have to say no to people. You have to remember that you have to take some time for yourself, or else you're not going to be any good to any movement or to any of the work that you're doing. So I am doing the best that I can. I'm not perfect at it, but certainly trying to be really good to myself in this time, but also anyone who knows me knows I'm a workaholic, and I will put everyone else before I put myself. And so that it's a real challenge going on right now.
Very cool. And, you know, I know you have some friends, you know, obviously, you know, president of the Connecticut Young Democrats, Democrats. So obviously you had some friends already up there at the Capitol when you when you started. But were there any people who you didn't know who now you're sort of friends with, or you're acquainted with, that you didn't think you would be, maybe? And what is it like when you get to run into like the U.S. senators like Blumenthal and Murphy and sort of get to pick their brain?
You know, it's really interesting because Senator Blumenthal held the seat in the legislature that I'm now representing. He represented the 145th district. So it's really cool, right, to be able to lean on him and talk to him about those things. And I serve in the legislature with his son, Matt, who's also a state rep from Stanford. I did go into the legislature with a ton of friends. I campaigned for a ton of them, you know, only a few months prior. And it was really nice for it to have a lot of them come down to campaign for me. And it's really interesting because I think we all, no one else knows what we're going through except all of us. And so we all kind of congregate together in these spaces and commiserate together on how we can make really good change, sustainable change as we move forward on key issues. As far as someone that I didn't know very well, that I've been getting to know a little bit more since I've been there. That's a really good question. I guess I would have to choose a Republican, but I don't even know which Republican I would choose.
I was going to ask, have you made any friends, you know, have you made any friends with the enemy?
Yeah. You know, there's been a lot of them that have walked over to me. And when they're walking over, I'm like, oh my God, what is about to happen? And they're like, I just wanted to introduce myself to you. I can't wait to work with you, blah, 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 whatever. And I'm like, okay, like, not a problem. Some have stopped me and said, you know, what you spoke about on the floor regarding said issue, like, was really phenomenal. And I don't agree with anything that you said, but it was really good. I'm like, okay. So if that's the case, it's every Republican then that's over there. But, you know, people have been very gracious and very nice and very helpful. And very warm. And so I'm really grateful to have that because I think that makes the transition a heck of a lot easier.
Gotcha. Awesome. Very, very cool. Thank you for your insight on that. Thank you for joining me on the show today. And one last thing that I ask my guests before they leave me is a question I've just kept going here into season two. I did it in season one, and I don't know if I'll ever stop. Connecticut's known for its pizza. I mean, we're famous, man. We're number one for pizza. And I know there was talk about it being the state food and everything like that. Obviously, that did not come to be.
It did.
Well, it didn't get. Well, is it the state food? Did it pass?
It passed.
Oh no,
it passed.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it passed, and I didn't. I was just like, what? Like, it was between that, or I think the other suggestion that someone had brought up in debate was that it should be a lobster roll, but it was pizza. It passed the House and the Senate.
Well, when you're in New Haven and you're looking to get pizza, what's your favorite place to get pizza in New Haven? Because that's, you know, that's kind of the location. That's the kind of what we're known for, the New Haven, the Abetz. But not only there, in Stamford, are there some places maybe we're sleeping on? And what are some restaurants that you like to go to as well? And, you know, real quickly, I didn't do this before, but shout out to Taco Daddy and the Lila Rose on Townsend. Chef Mo Major, because they're crushing it. So shout out to them before you get started. So what are some places you like to go pizza and restaurant wise?
Definitely love Taco Daddy and Lila Rose. So definitely a shout out to them. For pizza. So in New Haven, I love to go to Modern. Modern's really good. It's an easy choice for me. We're actually getting a Sally's here in Stamford. I heard about that. I think one of my favorite restaurants in Stamford that I just go to incessantly over and over and over again has to be, for pizza at least, is Town Parlor. And I think another place that people really aren't paying attention to with pizza is actually Parlor Pizza in Darien. Their pizza is very, very good, and they've got a phenomenal wine selection. So, I eat everywhere in Stamford, so it's not a good thing to ask me where's my favorite, especially as a state representative, because I'll say the wrong answer no matter what. Westover Pizza is really good, and I think that they do a lot of great things for our community. But one restaurant that I will tell everyone to keep an eye out for will be at the Sono Collection, and it is called Jacob's Pickle. And Jacob's Pickle is my favorite restaurant in New York City. It's on Amsterdam Ave in New York. It's soul food, but it's like a different kind of flair of soul food. It's like this new American style, but they give you a ton of food. And so I wish people could see me describe this on camera, because I always order the same thing now. I always order the smothered chicken and mushrooms. And so they bring you this biscuit, and then they put this wonderfully succulent piece of chicken on top of the biscuit. It's fried. And then they monster it up with mozzarella cheese and this cream mushroom sauce. And then they give you a tin of grits, and the grits are actually really good, but the chicken is so good. And I mean, and it's so much food, I can never finish it. So they actually are opening, they'll have their location in New York, and they're opening another location at the Sono Collection in Norwalk. And I encourage everyone to go, because anytime I take a friend to New York, we go to Jacob's Pickle, and everyone complains about going there. But when they get there, they love it. So
I'm going, and I'm telling them that Connecticut State Representative Corey Paris said.
That's why, you know, I'm trying this summer to lose weight, because I'm eating so much in my pictures. It's like it's true what they say about the camera. It adds on 10 pounds. So.
Nah, you look great. You look great. It's so, you know, it's such a pleasure to finally get to see you on the screen and meet you over Zoom. And I look forward to meeting you in person sometime down the line when things aren't so hectic and crazy. I mean, oh my gosh. But listen, thank you for some of your free time. I really appreciate it. State representative from the 145th district here in Connecticut, the great Corey Paris. Thank you so much for taking some time to join us on the show. And I hope you have a great evening. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Jeff. Thank you, everybody.
Huge thanks once again to my guest on the podcast today, State Representative Corey Paris. Thank you so much, Corey, for joining me on the show. So awesome to hear all the wonderful things that you are already doing and how you are adjusting to your new role. Wishing you nothing but the best, and look forward to talking to you again soon down the road. Yet again, just like that, another episode of Sweeten Up is in the books. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts. We would greatly appreciate your feedback. As a reminder, you can play the podcast with the help of your smart speaker by simply saying, "Play the podcast Sweeten Up with Jeff Spencer." Thank you, as always, to my best friends, the guys who make it all possible, post-production and music, Morgan Lutzi, art director and production, Kurt Vinci, editor and writer, Nick Passacretta, and huge thanks to Devin Cipelli. Our guest on the podcast next week is up in the air. We are continuing to record episodes all summer long. We have so many fantastic guests lined up, and I cannot wait to share those conversations with you all. It's a busy time right now with vacations and getting back to work now that COVID has calmed a bit. I appreciate everyone so much for listening. We will see you next week. So, until then, as always, you know the deal. Stay safe, stay healthy, love you all, peace.